We are pleased to inform you that you have a place at Potterversity.
Welcome to Potterversity, a Potter Studies podcast. This is episode 36, Galactic Harry and the Intersecting Fandoms. Thanks for joining us at Potterversity. Today, Emily Strand and I are having an intimate conversation, just the two of us, about overlapping science fiction and fantasy fandoms, including, of course, the Potter fandom. I am Katie McDaniel, professor of history at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, and co-editor of Harry Potter for Nerds, too.
And I am Emily Strand, instructor of comparative religions and cultural competency at Mount Carmel College, and author of several Harry Potter essays.
You are also, Emily, you know, a fan who has overlapping fandoms.
I do.
Of course, any of our longtime listeners out there also know that you have a really solid Star Wars fandom.
Yep.
You're part of that.
I am.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit. I'm not even really sure I know about this. How did your participation in Star Wars fandom overlap with your Harry Potter fandom? Did you come about them at about the same time, or was one before the other?
30 years from now, it will seem that they came about at the same time. But I know that Harry Potter was first.
Uh-huh.
And Harry Potter was really a gateway for me into all kinds of what I would call, you know, speculative fiction.
Mm.
So that kind of covers the gamut of science fiction and fantasy and dystopia and all that stuff. So imaginative literature, I would say. Because,
right.
I read a lot of classics growing up. My parents were not science fiction fantasy readers. They were realistic novel readers, historical fiction, all that type of stuff. So we had a lot of that in our household, and reading was very much encouraged. But in terms of books and films, it was the more realistic stuff. So Harry Potter really introduced me into the world of imaginative stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Star Wars followed on. It was weird when I didn't really watch Star Wars movies, except for if friends were watching them, I would join in, which was pretty rare. But when I found out when I was pregnant, when I found out that I was having a boy, that was a surprise to me. I don't know why it was a surprise. I just thought I was going to have Curl.
Scott,
I don't
know. Okay.
I was like, nope. And as soon as they said, well, it's a boy, I thought to myself, we're going to do Star Wars together. Because I was kind of under the mistaken impression that Star Wars was for boys. So I just kind of thought, we're going to do Star Wars. Hmm. And, you know, that has really been, that was a premonition, because we definitely do Star Wars together. And he and I have like the same level of Star Wars love, which is high.
Yeah.
As K2SO once said, it's high. So so then we have. And then Amy Sturgis is definitely mm-hmm. part of my Star Wars story, because she offered a course at Signum University in 2015 to lead up to The Force Awakens and the new era of Star Wars.
Amy was, you know, to what you said about the Star Wars not being just for boys, you know, Amy was long time Star
oh,
Wars
yes.
fan, dressing up oh, like yes. Princess Leia when she was in like junior high or what have you. So,
oh no, kindergarten. She kindergarten. Went to her first day of kindergarten with Wookiee socks on. So,
right. Yes.
Big time, big
Bring
time.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes. And so she's like the opposite. And so she introduced me to this whole world of like mm-hmm. these lifelong fans, you know, adult fans of Star Wars, you know, who are just so passionate and so wonderful. And so, yeah. And it was funny, because when I took her class, I audited it. That's a hard word to say. Because I just was like, I don't know. know if I'm gonna like Star Wars. You know, there's wars in the title. I don't really like war. You know, I don't like a lot of shooting and pew pew pew, you know. But turns out, when it's all in Star Wars, I love it all. So.
Yeah, right. I think that's really interesting. You know, I had thought that I would be sharing my Harry Potter fandom with my kids, and it has not really worked out that way. I have one who's read all of them, and I think if I can get Griffin back into it, he read the first ones when he was too young to really appreciate or understand them, but he insisted. And I'm having trouble getting him back into the stories in a way that would be significant. Now, he does really like Star Wars. He read the, you know, the junior novels of the most recent ones. And he's very into that. I think he really, so here's my little brag. He just got his black belt in Taekwondo.
I am
And I,
so impressed by that.
yeah, and he's on the smaller side. He actually likes being one of the shorter kids in his class. He sees it as a strength. And I think of him like Yoda in the prequel Star Wars, when Yoda is like at the top of his game, you know, as a Jedi, and just, you know, I think that's Griffin rocks that vibe to me. So, I think he's got more of a Star Wars thing, but I haven't really gotten any of them into a lot of fan stuff related to those. Now, Griffin, he builds all the Lego Star Wars. I think we're gonna go bankrupt paying for Legos,
If only we were
vehicles.
living next door to each other, Katie, we could just have them swap. We could split
Yes.
all the Star Wars Legos and they could just swap back and forth because,
Yes. Oh, that would be great. Yeah. So, you know, and I have to say that Harry Potter was really the first thing I got into that I was a fan of. And it took me a long time to realize I was in a fandom. You know,
Like, here
because
I am.
I didn't really think about it. You know, people got me Harry Potter stuff and I liked Harry Potter stuff and I was reading all the books and I was doing the things. And it didn't occur to me that I was participating in something like the language that we have now to describe these communities is just more specific
It
than what
is.
I had grown up with or what I would have been able to identify for myself. And then at a certain point, you know, I owned it. I was like, yeah, I am a Harry Potter fan. And I got the hair, I, my office is filled with Harry Potter posters, and I've gotten the little pop figures, and I've got fan art, and I have these medieval tapestries on my walls, and you know, people are like, oh, these medieval tapestries are really cool, and they are the Lady and the Unicorn, and I'm like, I just wanted my office to look as much like the Gryffindor common room as possible, and I didn't realize that until they were up, and I was like, oh, I see what I have done.
That's
Yeah,
great. I remember those tapestries. I in my one
they're
short
cool, aren't they?
visit to your
Yeah.
office, yes, I do remember that the tapestries are very cool.
Yeah. And so I think it's interesting because once you're in a fandom, then you can sort of think about how you might cross over into other groups. And especially these sci-fi fantasy, like you say, this, I think of it as speculative fiction, you know, the when you're really engaging your imagination in exploring other worlds or perhaps future worlds or past worlds. And I think there is significant enough overlap that if you like one, there is this possibility that you're going to like the others. And then I also think that they are definitely the people who are producing the Star Wars stuff and the Harry Potter stuff are definitely paying attention to what's happening in those worlds as well.
No, absolutely. I agree. It's like well, I've heard this, that once you learn one language in a language group, mastering those other languages in that language group is really not all that difficult. And I think that with the fandoms, it is, and I think even the concept of fandom has sort of spread widely out of, because I mean, people have been getting together at science fiction conventions for,
Yeah.
100 years. And, but for that to then spread to like the fantasy novels of J.R.R. Tolkien, that became a major sort of cult of fandom around those books, around The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And so that kind of spread into that realm. And then you see other fandoms, like I think I follow a fandom account for Watership Down on Twitter,
Oh.
which is like super cool. I mean, sometimes they advertise that there are these conferences and stuff that focus on that book. And so it's really fascinating the way that our understanding of fandom has. And then you become kind of on a team. One of the ways that I relate to my friend Kat Sass, who I've mentioned on this podcast before, big friend of the show,
Yeah,
is that
she's
we
been on the
both
show. Yeah.
love, yeah, is that we both love Watership Down. And so we kind of were on that same team together. And Yeah, I definitely think that realizing that you're involved in this level, may not be automatic, but then it's easily translated to other properties, those same feelings of loyalty and investment in the story that's being delivered.
And that kind of geeky desire to share it with other people who feel the same way that you do about it. And, I was thinking about that when you're talking about Watership Down. And, there's just a joy in that that can't be replicated by anything else somehow. Yeah, now you're also an ACCA fan, and we use ACCA fan to describe, people who are fans but also do, critical scholarship in these worlds. And as you have done with Harry Potter, you are also producing critical essays about Star Wars and participating in the Star Wars scholarly community. So, what do you think are some of the common threads that unite your academic interests in Harry Potter and Star Wars stories?
Well, that's a great question. One of the things that I like about both of the franchises, and one of the things that I always end up treating in some way or another, is that both have a clearly articulated sense of right and wrong. And although they don't shy away from exploring the complexities of what makes things right and wrong, and so I think that's something that really stands out to me. I also love soul triptychs, in terms of groups of characters who represent different aspects of humanity, and to see them function together is to understand the integrity of the human person. And so I love when groups of characters, ensemble casts, work together to achieve the goal, and everybody has their strength, and you're cheering this person on, but you didn't realize how much you loved this character until something bad happens to them, and you're just so well invested in that. So there's a real depth to them, and yet they're also intended for children. And I think that there's a joy and a freedom in loving something as an adult that was really intended for children, because they're not written by children. So, children's literature is that weird category that doesn't really describe who writes it, So they're not written by children. They're written by very complicated adults and very insightful adults. So that makes them a joy to enjoy with your child, and yet also enjoy on a totally deeper level, and maybe even be able, sometimes my son and I will discuss things about Star Wars or Harry Potter. He's kind of like your kids. Harry Potter's kind of like more my thing, and then Star Wars is more his thing, although it's my thing too. But so sometimes we'll get in these discussions, and hopefully, my thinking about it like an adult can offer him a window into thinking a little bit more like an adult. I don't want him to grow up too fast, but it's good to have these critical insights. So
Yeah,
that's kind of a start on an answer. How about you?
and what you said, I really like. I'm just going to turn it around a little bit because it's good for you to also think like a child sometimes.
Yeah,
You know, as
absolutely.
adults, I think we mature beyond too many things sometimes. And this is like what Tolkien said in On Fairy Stories, where he was talking about fairy stories not only being good for children, but are just the most powerful kind of literature, and that adults need these stories too. And I think that's where that intersection comes in. And I was thinking about, as I was preparing to ask you that question, I was like, well, what would I say? Because I have some overlapping academic interests too, and I've just ventured into writing my own little Star Wars scholarship there. But
Yes,
as I
I
was sort of thinking
yes.
about, I've done some sci-fi, I've done some things on Connie Willis, and I think what
Love
I'm
her.
really interested in is the intersection of popular culture and history, and particularly how people use history and ideas about the past to project into the future and also to understand the present. And that's what I'm really most fascinated with. And I would say that is probably a strand that runs through all of my work without my knowing that that was what I was doing. But
It's
I'm
what you're
just very,
attracted to.
yeah, it's like a philosophy of history, but definitely like on the ground, like what's going on? What are we doing when we are thinking about things this way? And when we're speculating with historical ideas and historical tropes, or even setting things in a historical period, or seeing an alternative outgrowth of a historical moment, like those what if counterfactual histories. And so I think all of that is just deeply, deeply interesting to me at a human level. You know, you were talking about the kind of moral aspects of them. And I also see it as a kind of moral, you know, there's witnessing, there is a real commitment to truth, and there is also a kind of way of understanding one's own identity in relation to the world that I think really comes from history, but can somehow also be really powerfully expressed through things that are like, quote unquote, not true, that are these more speculative, theoretical, like playgrounds for some of these ideas. And so I think that's what really motivates a lot of my scholarship, whether it's Harry Potter or something else. So just to follow up on, I gave a little tantalizing tidbit there about having written a Star Wars paper. And in fact, I wrote that paper for you and Amy Sturgis for a book that you are putting together. And Emily, you have now got two anthologies that will be coming out very shortly. If not, is the Star Trek one out already?
Yeah. So Star Trek is available for pre-order on the publisher's page. So just a little background story. We were asked to do a call for papers for a book for Vernon Press, which is a press that's got offices in the U.S., academic press offices in U.S. and in Europe. And so they asked us to do this, you know, this call for papers. And so we did this, and we got, and it was supposed to be a book on Star Trek and Star Wars and like a combined thing. So, so we sort of called out for papers, and we said it can be about either franchise or both franchises. And we got so many amazing submissions to the call for papers that we were like, I remember Amy and I were talking about it on a Zoom, and she goes, "Hey, it's twins." I said, "Yeah, it's twins." So we kind of treated it like twins, and we accepted, you know, papers accordingly for two separate volumes, one on Star Trek and one on Star Wars. So they're kind of companion volumes. Beautiful artwork by Emily Austin that it makes draws out that they're companion volumes, and
gorgeous covers.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this. So Star Trek is available for pre-order already, and it's it says there's a 4-week wait, so I assume that means that it'll be
pretty soon
arriving in my mailbox in May sometime. So that's exciting. So,
and that's Vernon Press, right?
Vernon Press. And then I assume Star Wars will be available sometime later this year.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, that's really exciting. And I know just doing something like that, it gets you more enmeshed in those fandoms. And I mean, Star Trek is another one that, you know, I watched all the Star Treks, but I didn't think of myself as a fan in any sort of deliberate way. But I love all those, and I find them interesting. And I have had a little sneak peek of your book. Actually, I'm quoted on the website because I reviewed the book, and it's so good. And people are going to find so many amazing things.
Thank you.
Just so many great topics that are colonialism. And also I love the language study, and some also ones about particular parts of the Star Trek series. And I think people will really love that. And then of course, and then I have my own contribution to the Star Wars when it was my first time writing Star Wars. And I was always with Amy. I was just like, "Amy, I need your help with this part of like, there's a depth to the, like what a fan could know about Star Wars."
That right.
I did not totally master, but I'm working on it. And then you sent out something to those of us who'd contributed about a Star Wars conference that was coming up.
Yes.
And you and I are both presenting in that. It's called Realizing Resistance Episode 3, put on by the Digital Cultural Studies Cooperative. And so I'm guessing it's the third Star Wars, and it's a virtual conference. So listeners, I think you could still register for that if you want.
You can. It's very affordable, and it's all online. And Amy Sturgis will also be presenting, as well as another contributor to our volume, Vicky Terrile. So
nice.
Yeah. So we're all. I know. I'm talking about Andor. You're talking about
Yeah, I called
Ray.
it Mirrors of Desire.
Mirrors of Desire.
So
Okay.
I was really interested in that moment where Ray has that experience in like a, dark side cave where she sees her reflection and she's not able to see. She literally says, let me see my parents, which is
Yeah.
like she wants Harry Potter's moment in the
Right.
Mirror of Erised Head. And I was like, that seems very like obviously a reference to me, but she doesn't get that. She gets this multiplicity of images of herself being reflected back, and it's such an interesting like question mark that moment to me that I really wanted to sort of think about it. And I was very excited to get the chance to do that in this paper. And the conferences, of course, it has to start May the 4th, and then I think a lot of the papers are on the 5th and the 6th, it seems like.
Yes.
So if anybody's interested in that, please join us. That we'd love to
Yeah.
have some listeners there. And this is, for me, it was a way to talk about the, so obviously I'm looking at the more recent Star Wars episodes with Rey. It's called the sequel trilogy. Am I right with my
Yep,
terminology?
that's what we call it.
Yes. And to think about that in relation to Harry Potter, because of course those are coming out after the Harry Potter phenomenon.
Oh,
And I
yeah.
find that to re be really interesting in terms of what the influences might be and so on. And I definitely think that there is conversation that is happening between them. And particularly when you think about how these Star Wars characters are understanding reflected images of themselves and what that means about who they are, what's their relationship to the past, to any legacies they might have from their parents who they don't really know. And then also, like, what's my destiny as a result of all that? And so I like the way that these mirror moments are telling them something about past, present, and future. I call them time compasses that are really supposed to orient both Ray and Harry in these, quests that are deeply, deeply moral, and like the fate of the universe, the fate of the wizarding world rests on get them getting it right.
Right, no pressure, kids.
Yeah, no, I think so. I was like, oh, there's something here. This is really cool. So I'm excited to talk with more Star Wars folks at
Yeah.
this conference, get some
Yeah,
feedback.
same. And I think your paper is a really great way of showing, because I again, like I joked earlier, 30 years from now, my love of Harry Potter and Star Wars will look contemporaneous. But, 50 years from now, Harry Potter and Star Wars will look more contemporaneous because they really are. And Star Wars seems a lot older because, it goes back to 1977, even earlier in its development. But
20 years is a drop in the bucket for
it
historians.
is. It really is. And like the prequel films, were really coming out at the same time the Harry Potter books were coming out. So, and then, you had a lot of Star Wars content coming out at the same time the Harry Potter movies were coming out. And so, so it's they really are, and I think your paper does, one of the things it does without trying to do is to show how some of these themes really shine through both of these narratives in a way that, helps us to reflect on our time and our culture and our what it means to be human right here and right now, and how that gets expressed in these stories. So, great paper.
No, that's what I'm trying to do. So
Yeah,
I'm glad it came across.
totally.
And I think we're in this really rich moment for speculative stories in this transmedia environment where, you have all these different ways that people can access the stories. And then, of course, the people who are making money off the stories, like they see lots of opportunities for additional stories. So, for example, you mentioned your papers about Andor, and I know Amy Sturgis was talking about Andor too. I think that there these additional Star Wars stories, I think they maybe are a model for the kinds of things that we might see coming up with Harry Potter. But before we get to that, tell me a little bit about what you said about Andor, and just fair warning, if you haven't watched Andor, maybe there might be some spoilers here, but it's so awesome. You should totally watch it. And
It
for
is
Harry
really
Potter
awesome.
people, oh man, it just strikes so many of the same
Yeah.
like liberation core like themes that I think Harry Potter people would love it. So, but
Yeah,
what
absolutely.
what's your paper about?
So my paper is a little subset of the chapter that I wrote for the forthcoming book for Vernon Press. So in that chapter, I look at an obscure Canadian art house film by a man named Arthur Lipset. Came out in 1963. It's called 2187. 21-87 is the title of the film. And it was a huge influence on George Lucas. It always kind of gets mentioned, but it doesn't get, to me, it doesn't get the attention it deserves because the themes are so central to all of Star Wars, really. And so in the chapter, I trace how those themes are central to all of Star Wars throughout the franchise. But then when Andor came out, the three episode arc that treats his time in the Imperial prison facility on Narkeena 5
right.
is just such a brilliant articulation of these same themes of man versus the machine and how man wins. In that he gleaned from this film, this obscure film, 2187, that it was just such a great articulation. So I actually had to go back and I had to amend the paper sort of at the 11th hour and added, like, you know, a fair bit of words to it.
Yeah. New stuff keeps coming out.
Exactly. And so I thought that would make that little section talking about Andor and 2187 would make a great conference talk because it's just a very small subset of the larger chapter. So that's what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to tell people a little bit about Arthur Lipset and his film. And then we're just going to go into Andor. We're going to talk about On Program, and we're going to talk about the call, the different numbers, all the numbers that crowd that arc of episode. There's just a million numeric references, and none of them are on accident. You know, they're all very purposeful and symbolic. And so we're going to talk about the symbolism of the number 7 and the symbolism of the number 5 and the symbolism of the number 1, because there's one way out. So that's the title of the paper. It's called One Way Out, The Enduring Influence of 2187 on Star Wars. So
cool.
Yeah. So that's going to be really great. But didn't you have a really interesting insight on some of the overlap in Andor between a couple of famous actors that appear in both Harry Potter and Andor?
Yeah. So this is actually, I'll tell you, this is actually my brother's idea. So I don't want to take it too much. Rob McDaniel, getting a shout out. I had watched Andor first and I was like, you have to watch. And so he was like telling me all along the way, kind of his thoughts when he would get to those places. But he was pointing out
that's the best.
And of course, like, so, I mean, we know there are actors who are in both. So for those of you who haven't seen it, the actress who plays Petunia in the Harry Potter movies, Fiona Shaw, she plays Andor's adoptive mother, Marva. And that was one where, I mean, that I saw right away, you know, I was like, this is Petunia's chance to do it right.
Right. With it was child. Satisfying. Right. Cause she's so good. She's such a good mom.
Right. And there's the element of sacrifice, but also the persistence of love, even in absence, and and for that actress to play both roles, it gives you, you know, it's that palimpsest idea where it gives you this idea that you are kind of watching Petunia in a way. And so it helps to bring those characters in juxtaposition to each other so you can think about the different paths that Petunia and Marva actually take in relation to a situation that's not really that different for the two of them. But then my brother also pointed out that Cyril Karn's mother, Edie, is Arabella Figg.
I love
movies.
It.
Catherine
I love her
Hunter
voice.
Is her name. Yes. And that she is also playing somebody who is going very contrary to the Arabella Figg character.
Yes.
But is in a sort of similar position, really on the periphery, on the outside, but making connections, you know, as a way to try to steer her son in a particular way. And yet you get the sense that, you know, she's not using this for good. Way that Arabella Figg does. And so you get, again, a juxtaposition of two characters who are in a kind of interesting relation to each other, and it makes you think about them. And so I really like these actor crossovers into the different series because they give you something additional to chew on a little bit about characters maybe you wouldn't have thought about having some kind of dynamic relationship with each other.
Right. And I mean, you know, even above and beyond, I mean, that's just cool. Even above and beyond, you know, because I mean, you can take a cynical view of it. Oh, they got these actors because, I mean, there are some Harry Potter, especially film fans, who are just so really kind of crazy about the films that they, not crazy in a bad way, but crazy in love with the films, that they will just go and watch any film with a Harry Potter actor in it.
Oh, sure. You know? Yeah.
And or any TV or whatever, you know. And so you know, you can be cynical about it and say, oh, well, they're just copying out of each other's books, you know. But there is this richness that I think really comes across. Like you were saying, like a palimpsest, that's like when a book, what was previously written in a book has been like kind of tried to be erased and then something else has been written on top.
Yeah.
Or just kind of comes through.
Yeah, in art history, right? You'd have an artist who would paint one painting over top of another one. And over time, the original image sometimes bleeds through so that you can kind of see it. And it changes the nature of that painting in ways that are interesting and evocative. So I find that to be kind of an interesting idea when you apply it to text, but also when you think about it in relation to these, you know, to the film, television series universe, where you have all these opportunities to even plant those things intentionally in ways that give people a new insight or a new perspective on the stories.
Right. I mean, I'm even thinking about, and this is a little bit of a spoiler for if you haven't seen Andor, so skip ahead if you don't want to hear it. At the end, in the final episode, Rick's Road of season one, Marva Andor has passed away in the previous episode, and they have her funeral, and there's this great projection of her giving a sort of speech. This is a tradition for them that they can give a speech after a posthumous speech, you know, at their funeral. And so, you know, if they have the opportunity. And so she gives this speech that really inspires everybody into rebellion against the Empire. And this is so, you know, to look at it from the lens of what happened in the final scenes in which we see Petunia Dursley, you know, it couldn't be more opposite.
Yeah.
In terms of
right,
what
she has a big speech there too.
Right. Right. Exactly. And
And
then, you know, she goes in kind of into hiding and, you know, she would never be the one to start that. Yeah. It is really fascinating. I'm sensing a paper. I don't know if you want to get your brother to write it.
Yeah.
Or if you guys
want
to write it together or.
Right. No, I know there's something really cool there to talk about with those characters. And I know that happens with other fandoms too, you know, where you can sort of see those overlaps. And that's one of the things that I think makes the, you know, the transmedia stuff and the richness of the environment. And even the fact that certain actors become more desirable probably for these projects because they've been in one series that's in the same genre of, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, speculative stories. And of course, so this brings us to our hot topic today. There is this. Now we've been told there's going to be a Harry Potter television show that HBO's streaming service Max is going to be offering for Harry Potter fans. And there's been a big to-do about it. Our producer, Lori Beckoff. Hey, Lori. She represented us on a Twitter dialogue among a variety of podcasters and other people at MuggleNet that's on Twitter. So I think that would be really cool to listen to. And so I've been sort of taking in some of the reactions. And, you know, I think there's a fair amount of negative reaction to it, you know, from people who don't want the movies to be spoiled and, you know, are you know, concerned about J.K. Rowling's grasp on it and seeming like it's, you know, a base commercial project. And, you know, and I don't disagree with any of those things, but I believe my comment to Lori was like, I'm just going to be honest. Like I will watch it.
Yeah.
I will be watching it.
Yeah.
And I actually really like the opportunity to revisit the stories in a way that, you know, is going to bring out different elements of it. And so, so I find all that really interesting, but I thought I would ask you, what's your feeling about this new, you know, this new television series version of Harry Potter?
Well, I in a real sense, I'm not at all surprised because I remember like having a conversation, and maybe it was with you, maybe it was on the podcast, or on, you know, a previous iteration of the podcast about how that would be like, you know, I think we were frustrated about the films and how they, you know, they left out, you know, the Marauders map or whatever,
Peeves.
You know, and
there's no Peeves,
right. Peeves and Quidditch in some books and things like that, you know, and, and our conversation circled around to whoever it was, hello out there, was that really we need a long form TV show, you know, to treat these books the way that they really ought to be treated. So in that sense, I'm not at all surprised. And it's the perfect time for it because, you know, you cannot provide too much content at this point.
Right. Because the way that the market is and the fan communities and so on, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so so I'm not at all surprised. Yes, I will, of course, watch it. I certainly give it a chance. You know, I'm a completionist, which can be a sort of a handicap sometimes because like I watched all of Angel. Okay. So like I loved Buffy, but then, and I started watching Angel because I loved Buffy. And then I was like, ooh, this is bad. And then I just kept watching Angel. And then I just kept watching Angel. And then I had to finish Angel. And
yeah,
that was a learning thing
for
me.
I've definitely dropped stuff before.
Yeah. I'm learning to drop stuff. My instinct is to finish it, but I'm learning when I need to just drop it and walk away. So I'll hopefully keep my head about it, but what I can't wait to see is how they differentiate themselves from the films. If they differentiate themselves
right.
from the films. So we've had Rings of Power with Lord of the Rings. You know, that's been kind of interesting, you know, to see what ways they're going to differentiate themselves and what ways they're just going to do kind of shameless callbacks to those wonderful films. Mm-hmm. You know, so that'll be a really great discussion point, I think.
Right. And, you know, I was thinking about this in relation to Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, that you have all of these adaptations and like do-overs. Star Trek did over some stuff, you know, and sequels and prequels and side stories. And
alternate
I guess
universes.
Yeah. We've just heard that Star Wars is going to do two additional stories. Yes.
Yes. So there's some new stuff coming out. We're going to get a feature film that ties together the plot lines or ties up the plot lines of The Mandalorian, The Book of Boba Fett, and I believe the Ahsoka show.
Okay.
And
right.
then we're going to get a feature film that stars Daisy Ridley rebuilding the Jedi Order. I'm so excited about that. Super excited.
But I was thinking, those were the two I was thinking of. And I was thinking that, you know, this, I think, is a model that the Harry Potter juggernaut is going to also probably be trying to follow, where they've got Fantastic Beasts. But if that doesn't do so well and they don't end up producing all those movies, then they're going to do some other kinds of things. And they're going to allow those to develop in ways that will keep the fans engaged. And I'm with you. Like, I'm interested with the Harry Potter because this is a redo, but in long form. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested what changes they'll make even to the setting, because the setting in the movies is kind of perfect.
Right. Like, how do you improve on that?
Yeah.
And
how
do you change it at all without, you know, alienating your fan base, your viewership, you know?
Yeah.
So it is. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I'm sure they're going to be taking pages out of the Rings of Power.
I was thinking book. When you brought that up, right, with Tolkien too, like, I think that that's another example where you've got people kind of redoing the story in different ways, and that there are ways to get it right. And there are ways to get it wrong.
Right.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that people are kind of hung up with about the Harry Potter TV series is this word faithfully, that it will be a faithful adaptation. And I have to say that my first thought was that this was trying to reassure people that it wasn't going to be a Game of Thrones type thing where they just kind of at a certain point, they're just going to cut loose like the Star Trek. The ones with Chris Pine, where they were like, and now it's a new timeline that we're creating.
Right.
So you don't feel like you already know everything about this story.
Well, they're not hemmed in by certain character deaths and what life events and things like that with characters. You know, it's a creative solution.
Well, and you know, I was thinking about this in relation to The Cursed Child, because the Cursed Child it's messing with the timeline and it's suggesting alternatives and so on. But I think I've told you and podcast listeners this before, I actually think the point of The Cursed Child is to say there's no messing with this story. It happened the way that it had to happen. Yeah. You can't bring Cedric back to life and have the story turn out well. So, right. I mean, I think it is really about the unchangeability of the story itself. And I think that's kind of what that faithful adaptation line was about there. That was my gut feeling about it. Yeah.
We're not going to tell it from Draco's point of view, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, but you know, somebody might, like, that would be a cool, you know, and I guess while J.K. Rowling still has such a tight rein on what's getting produced and so on, maybe we won't see something like that. But I think that kind of thing, there would totally be a fan base
who would
go nuts about that.
Huge.
I mean, and
huge.
Like, I'm just going to say again, like, I will watch it. If somebody's going to do it, I will be watching that. Because I will watch all the things. I'm into everything in the world of Harry Potter. Like, sign me up.
Yeah. Although I can't say that I play the mobile game.
No, I'm not. Well, yeah, I'm not a gamer.
Yeah, I'm not. And that goes for Star Wars too. Although sometimes I'm a little bit interested in some of the Star Wars games because, you know, increasingly they have some really interesting narratives. But I know my problem with the games is that if I start doing that, man, that's all I'll do. I won't stop.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I watched all of Angel, guys. I watched all of Angel. So, yeah, I know my limits, but
so funny.
You're right. And Katie, we'll have, you know, we'll watch the show and we'll have conversations about it with all our friends who love Harry Potter. And it'll be
fun. And even if we hate it, we're going to have a great time.
Well, that's almost more fun.
I know. So, yeah. So bring it on, you know.
Bring it.
And I think these are the kinds of things that keep the fandom going, whether you love it or you hate it. And
right.
I'm so interested in, you know, in all these crossovers and how you can even get stimulation about my Harry Potter fandom when I'm watching Andor.
Right.
Because
exactly.
of the actors in it, you know.
So basically what we're saying is Accio Harry Potter streaming show.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah, like just like I'm watching all the Star Wars stuff. So yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. Emily, so nice to have a one-on-one chat with you.
I know. It was. I mean, not that we don't love our guests, but it is fun to keep it simple.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, I hope that maybe some of our listeners will join us at the conference. But Emily, I'm excited to, you know, to hang out with you and the other people involved in the Star Wars anthology at the Realizing Resistance Episode 3 conference coming up. So
me too. Yeah. And everybody can just Google that to find out more about it. But also if you're on Twitter, my handle is @EKCStrand. And I've been retweeting a lot of the conference tweets with information about how to register and things like that.
Nice. Nice. Well, wonderful. Okay. So we are going to end with a quote from the wise and, of course, very uniquely perspectived Luna Lovegood, who said in The Order of the Phoenix, "Things we lose have a way of coming back to us in the end, if not always in the way we'd expect."
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Potterversity. Send us your thoughts on the episode or propose ideas for future episodes by writing to PotterversityPodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, consider leaving a review on iTunes, and be sure to follow Potterversity on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Potterversity is brought to you by MuggleNet, the number one Wizarding World resource since 1999. Emma Nicholson is technical director, and the show is produced by Laurie Beckoff. Our theme music is performed by The Tau, featuring Sean Elsbernd, Scott Hacker, Travis Princey, Ashley Shepherd, and Emily Strand, and produced by Sean Elsbernd. I'm your announcer, Dr. Sarah Brown.
Until next time, class dismissed.